I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. On the program today, William Mersch and Ricardo Flores. Both of them are professors in the University of Illinois Percussion Division in the School of Music, and they are leading respectively, actually, I guess in reverse order of how I mentioned them, University of Illinois Steel Band Concert, Saturday night at 7:30, and the University of Illinois Percussion Ensemble Concert, Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. We will hear about those concerts, hear quite a bit about percussion instruments in general, even to an extent of how some of them are played and some of the nuances, and some selections from those ensembles, particularly the steel band and some of the music that the percussion ensemble will be playing, all coming up on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. That was the second movement, a tango from a suite of five pieces called Band Dancing by Jack Stamp, played here by the U.S. Air Force Heritage of America Band, conducted by Major Larry H. Lang, Commander. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and with me on the show today are the entire percussion division at the University of Illinois School of Music. William Mersch is chair of the division, Ricardo Flores, the other professor, and both of them have been here quite a while, and both of them are leading different ensembles from the division in concerts this weekend. On Saturday, Ricardo Flores leading the UI Steel Band, which also includes performance by IPAN.
Yes.
And that's at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in the Caldwell Playhouse. And then on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, William Mersch leads the University of Illinois Percussion Ensemble in the Follinger Great Hall. So there's actually a lot of concerts this weekend from the University of Illinois. We've featured a few of them here on Live and Local. And we'll be hearing some recorded performances by both of these ensembles on today's edition. So thanks, gentlemen, for coming in on the show today.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
And it was actually great that you're both on the same weekend, because we can talk not only about your individual ensembles, but about the whole business of teaching percussion and what goes on at in the percussion division. Because I know you have a number of ensembles, and it's always interesting reading on the School of Music website different teaching philosophies. I think that's kind of cool that they put that on there. So let me just, in fact, begin, William, with the overall percussion division. What, for those who don't know even what percussion necessarily means, and I think percussion drums, it's a whole lot more than that. Students who come here are expected to know more than just how to play the drums.
Percussion specifically is defined as musical instruments which produce sound by striking them, by hitting something.
So things you hit.
Things you hit, basically.
This desk, that could be a percussion instrument.
It could be, and it is in some cases. Percussion, and in fact, you could even get into an argument with some pianists that the piano is a percussion instrument.
They would probably argue against it.
Well, you have some people who would say a piano is a string instrument, but the basic action of a piano is that you push a key and a hammer strikes a string.
So it's something that is hit.
So it's in that way. However, we don't include piano in our general course of study, but we do include all the drums, all the way from timpani, or specifically pitched drums in the orchestra.
And timpani, for those who don't know that term, are the kettle drums, commonly.
In the British version, kettle drums, yes. We usually use the Italian word. So we have timpani, then we have all of the various drums from snare drum, bass drum, field drum, tenor drum, and then the various ethnic drums, which Ricardo could go on about.
Like
so he might as well.
Oh, yeah.
We got him here.
Well, the African drums like djembe or djundun or congas. I specialize in Afro-Cuban percussion, which includes congas, bongos, timbales, using the Latin jazz ensemble, which I believe you had on recently.
Yesterday's program.
Right. And there are a lot of other ethnic drums, including tabla and drums from different countries. We have ensembles from that represent those countries, like the Gamelan Ensemble. It's not part of the percussion division, But the University School of Music has a gamelan ensemble and an African drumming ensemble. On the steel band concert, I'm actually going to incorporate a bit of world percussion as well on this concert. We'll be doing a conga de comparsa, which is a traditional Cuban groove, which includes several congas, claves, a lot of bells, different pitched cowbells, sartenes, which are frying pans. Yes, believe it or not. And a bombo, which is a bass drum, and a caixa, which is a snare drum. We'll also be doing a tambu bambu, which is a type of music from Trinidad. It's actually the predecessor to the modern steel drum, which it's called tambu bambu because it's got usually uses bamboo poles to produce a bass-like sound, and we're using PVC pipe instead of bamboo because it's hard to find nice bamboo in Illinois. And that also includes found instruments like metal pipes and bottles. And like I mentioned, the bamboo, we're using different sizes of PVC pipe to represent or to substitute for the bamboo.
As long as you're using found instruments, any trash can lids?
Not on this concert.
Old-fashioned metal trash can lids?
Not on my concert.
Not on his concert. But on the percussion ensemble concert, we're doing some John Cage and Lou Harrison. So we're using brake drums. We're using elephant bells.
Those are
hard
bells
to find.
What are those?
Well, there are certain bells, both wooden or brass, that elephants traditionally wear. And we're using the fancy dress parade.
No, this is not bells. Traditional among elephants.
This is traditional among elephant keepers. The sort of idea that cowbells wear bells, right?
Cows wear bells.
I'm getting the giggles over this idea that, you know, that these are things that elephants wear around.
Yeah.
As if they were to make them themselves.
Well, they select them carefully.
Oh, Bill, did you mention the tin cans?
Oh, yes. We're playing tin cans. We're playing a conch shell, and also in a John Cage piece. We're playing, we were talking about percussion. We also include instruments of friction. So we have lion's roars, which are similar to a Brazilian instrument called a cuica. In both cases, where you have a wooden stick, which is mounted through the center of the drum head, and then by getting the friction from either your hand or a rosin cloth on the wooden stick, you get a resonance out of the drum head.
And sometimes you can do something where you pull a rope through a membrane of some kind.
It's another version of a lion's roar is to have a string through the drum. We actually use a wooden stick because it's easier to grab.
So, you know, if I'm a kid listening to this conversation, I imagine I'm thinking, oh, I do that all the time, or, you know, I hit these things, or what fun.
That's right.
I mean, I would think being a percussionist could potentially be an awful lot of fun, and you can also vent a lot of your frustrations. Do you think that has anything to do with why you guys are percussionists? And they had the same reaction. You're not going to answer that.
No, we're not. Oh, we're going to pass on.
All right, fine.
Right, next question, please.
All right, let's go back to the topic.
But it does raise the issue that usually being a percussionist involves a huge amount of logistical consideration about, first of all, how am I going to acquire all these things? Where am I going to keep all these things? How am I going to move all these things? So on and so forth.
And how much time do I need to allot to getting my stuff where it needs to be?
Well, yes. And how early do I have to be there in order to get everything set up and ready to go?
And sometimes am I getting paid extra to do it?
Sometimes.
But not very often. Yeah. Usually that just goes with the territory.
Definitely not in a university situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you decide, I'm going to play the string bass, you better have a car to haul it in or have a lot of friends with big vehicles who are willing to haul your stuff around.
As you probably know with your Prairie Ensemble, the percussionist is always usually the first one to show up to set up and the last one to leave to tear down because we have so much gear.
Yeah. So I'm sure they're happy whenever it's a smaller. Oh, good. But then again, they don't have as much to do with the concert, so maybe they're not.
Depends what your program. We didn't get to the rest of it, but percussion also includes all the pitched instruments, the keyboard instruments, we call them xylophone, marimba, vibraphone, all that sorts of thing.
So the ones that are most closely related to the piano, going
there
back
you go.
To that.
Drum set is part of percussion.
But a harpsichord would not be a percussion instrument because it's
plucked. Harpsichord is a plucked. That's right.
Yes. So just to mention the instrument that your wife happens to play.
Exactly.
We're talking with William Mersch, who is head of technically chair of the percussion division at the University of Illinois, and Ricardo Flores, who's associate professor there as well. They are the two professors of percussion at the School of Music, and both of them leading concerts this weekend, the UI Steel Band Saturday night at 7:30 and the UI Percussion Ensemble Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, both of them at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in different theaters. And I know you both brought some recordings along, so let's give a listen first to the group that's going to play first, which is the Steel Band. This is the whole Steel Band in this recording, right?
Yes, this is a version of the Steel Band a couple of years back. We played this tune, Mopan. Actually, it's called Mopan. It's written by Lord Kitchener, who's a famous calypsonian. His full name is Aldwin Roberts, but he goes by Lord Kitchener. It's a fun calypso. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
It was a tune called Mopan, performed here by the University of Illinois Steel Band under the direction of Ricardo Flores, who is with us on Live and Local today on FM 90.9, along with William Mersch, head of the percussion division at the University of Illinois School of Music and leader of the UI Percussion Ensemble. Who, remind us, who wrote that tune?
Lord Kitchener.
That's right. And was he an actual lord, or did he just call himself
that? He just called himself that, as far as I know.
Sort of like Count Basie.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Duke Ellington. And was it Lester Young was Prez? This came up on the conversation on this show the other day, as a matter of fact, I believe. And the Steel Band is giving a concert in Urbana at the Krannert Center tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Caldwell Playhouse, and then the Percussion Ensemble Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Our program today on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from Parkland Art Gallery at Parkland College, seeking to expand appreciation of various art forms, promote the development of artist talent, and encourage aesthetic awareness. The gallery's exhibitions and educational programs are offered free of charge to the public. The Steel Band, since we've just played this tune, we'll hear them again a little bit later. I think you mentioned earlier originated in Trinidad.
Correct.
How? I mean, why Trinidad, and any idea what possessed them to do this?
Well, actually, it's good that you asked that question, because we're doing a tambu bamboo, which was a predecessor to the steel band. And before steel drums existed, there were the African slaves that were in Trinidad, it was colonized by the British, were forbidden to play their native instruments, which are drums, and it's very important to their culture. So they'd go into the rainforest and grab whatever they could to produce sounds and make music that they could beat on. These are found objects that they could beat on. They use these bamboo poles to produce bass tones. And as you'll see at the concert on Saturday, we have four different sizes of bamboo poles producing four different bass pitches. You get a groove going with these different pitches, and then other people will play, beat on sticks or beat on pieces of pipe, or they use brake drums, biscuit tins, whatever they could find to make sound. Well, one time there's a story about a person who had a biscuit tin, loaned it to a friend of his, and this friend of his borrowed it all day to go play with tambu bamboo, and he bashed it to smithereens until he brought it back to his friend, whose name was Spree Simon, by the way. And Spree looked at it, and it had all of these dents in it. He noticed that when he struck these dents, they produced these bubbles in the tin. They produced different pitches. So he took a hammer and tuned these a little bit and goes around the village playing Mary Had a Little Lamb on this biscuit tin for everybody, showing them that you can produce pitch on this metal instrument. Well, at the same time was around World War II, and the U.S. military was dumping oil barrels into the Caribbean Sea. They wash up on shore in Trinidad, and they'd find these oil barrels. Well, as you can see, that's what led to the modern-day steel drum. They took these oil barrels and started tuning them, producing pitches on those, and that's what turned into the steel drum. So that's why steel drums originated in Trinidad.
So they're actually playing on the bottom of the drum.
Actually, it is the bottom, because the top has, you're right, has a spout on it, so it's got a hole in it. So they'd flip it over and play on the bottom.
So you somehow or another dent the bottom in different ways, and each of those dents plays a different pitch.
Right. You separate the notes. It's they used to sink the pans, that is, produce this concave shape by using a bowling ball or a sledgehammer or something to sink it, and then they'd use a punch and a hammer to separate the pitches. Make this line using just a punch to separate these pitches, and you get a few different pitches on a drum, and you can tune those to. They started off with just three pitches, then a pentatonic scale, then diatonic scales, and finally the chromatics.
So how much of that Spree story is true, and how much is apocryphal? Do you have any idea?
As far as I know, it's all true, but I'm not from Trinidad.
And if you were, you probably wouldn't tell if it was true or not.
I probably wouldn't know.
Yeah, exactly. The bigger the drum, the bigger the barrel, the deeper the sound, right?
That's true. Actually, it's the same size barrel that's used for all the instruments, but on a lead pan, which is a soprano instrument, which it's actually called a tenor, but it's a soprano voice, the pitches are smaller. So you can fit more pitches onto one drum. And the smaller the area that produces the pitch, the higher the pitch will be. So on the bass pans, you only have about three segments on that drum to produce three pitches. So you need to use six individual drums to produce an octave and a half on the bass pans, but on a lead pan, you've got one drum, and it's got, I think, 2.5 octaves on it.
So you said it's all the same drum, except that it's you have to cut part of it off.
Well, you do cut off the skirt.
Make it higher.
Right, the skirt is a side. Actually, that's not what makes it higher. What makes it higher is the separating the pitches and making the area where the pitch is smaller.
Oh.
So on a bass pan, one of the bass pans, you separate that segment into three parts. So you only have three pitches. Each pitch is huge. On the lead pans, the highest pitches are no more than like the size of a half dollar or so.
So then why do you make the skirt longer or shorter on different drums?
That I'm not real sure. I'm not a tuner, but they are smaller, shorter for the higher pitch drums, and the lower the pitch goes, the longer the skirt goes. Probably has something to do like resonators on a marimba. I'm talking about other percussion instruments. The lower the pitch on a marimba, the longer the resonator needs to be in order for it to work for that pitch. And same thing on the lead pans. They're very short skirts. And it sounds best if you had a very long skirt on a lead pan. I'm not sure what it would sound like.
I would imagine that it has something to do with, since it's not a fixed volume of air, which is what happens with a real resonator. I think it's just that each pan is sunk a certain distance, and that distance increases as the depth, as the register gets lower, doesn't it? So I would think they just sort of cut the skirt off to where there's enough skirt that the pan can rest on that side without sitting on the dome.
But actually, it's on the lead pans, they don't.
It goes further?
It goes further. The dome of the lead pan does go below the skirt a bit. Mm-hmm. Then when you get to the double tenors, the skirt's a little longer. The double seconds, they're finally long enough that you could rest it on the skirt and not harm the
See, this is where we need to be having a television show so we can actually
see what we're talking
have
about.
A whole set here displayed in our studio, and then we can sort
of. And the bass pans are full height, the full drum.
That's the full length of the 55-gallon drum.
The gallon drum, and then they sit more or less directly on the ground rather than being on a stand.
Exactly.
Since Ricardo made the segue for us just a little bit earlier to the idea of the tuned instruments like the marimba, which happens to be your specialty, William Mersch, how many of the students are expected when they come into the university's program to be able to play all of the mallet instruments, or any of the mallet instruments, for that matter?
All of the students are expected to.
So what do they have to do? If you're going to audition for the school, what do you have to do to get in?
Percussion covers a huge range of instruments, as we started to allude to.
But they obviously can't audition on all those things.
But in terms of the real focus and the private instruction, they're focused on four areas, and those are snare drum, timpani, keyboard or marimba, it's the primary one, and drum set. So most of our weekly private lesson instruction focuses on those, on at least usually two of those four areas in any particular semester. But those four are the basic meat and potatoes, so to speak, of what we're covering.
And what else is in the family that marimba is part of?
Marimba would also be along with vibraphone or xylophone or glockenspiel or chimes. Or what am I?
Crotales.
And what's the difference between those who things that right. People may have heard the term but don't really know?
Right. Well, first of all, the sounding object, the bar, as we would usually call it, is made out of a varying material. It could either be made out of wood or metal.
So that's the thing you hit with your mallet.
Yeah, the thing that vibrates, the thing that you're striking with the mallet. So on a marimba and a xylophone, the bars are made out of rosewood. And on a vibraphone, they're made out of aluminum. On glockenspiel, they're made out of steel. Crotales, they're made out of cymbal bronze. So the material itself is partially the definition. The reason that the instrument is called a xylophone is because xylo is for wood and phone is sound. So,
didn't know that.
There you go.
And I also didn't know that they have to be rosewood?
Rosewood it has to be a very, very hard, dense wood, which has resonant qualities. And after experimentation on almost every available wood, rosewood, a specific species, I think is the word, of rosewood that used to grow in Honduras and now in Belize, is the preferred wood for use as xylophones and marimbas.
But we can't blame percussionists for the loss of these trees.
The rainforest? Well, marimbas and xylophones aren't the only use of rosewood. Rosewood is used in fine furniture. Rosewood is used for a number of other musical
instruments. Bassoons. We can blame bassoonists
clarinets,
also.
Bassoons. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know about the clarinets. Is that what it is? Ebony sometimes also.
Ebony, grenadilla is another wood, but yeah, rosewood shows up.
The vibraphone also is called that for another reason.
Well, the vibraphone began as an experiment in the 19-teens or 20s with making a steel marimba. That was the first experimentation just to see what that would sound like. And then shortly thereafter, someone came up with the idea of you have the resonators, which are open at the top end underneath the bar and closed at the lower end in order to have a fixed volume of air which matches the pitch of the bar. They installed little baffles which open and close the top of the resonator and thereby throw the resonator out of phase with the bar. And then those baffles are connected in one long rod across all the white notes and one rod across the black notes underneath the notes. And then there's a motor drive which rotates all those baffles. And you can vary the speed of that rotation. And that gives it this artificial vibrato sound, which is the connection, probably the connection to the vibraphone.
That part sounds logical enough. It almost sounds like you've got to be a physicist to know all this stuff.
Well, yeah.
Because I was getting as lost as I did in physics.
There's a certain amount of, the more you understand acoustic principles, the probably the better off you are. You also have to be a bit of a machinist in order to keep all these things functioning properly.
So do you have to maintain your own instruments?
Well, when it comes to the really skilled aspect, which is the tuning of the individual bars, that you send off to a specialist who does it under very controlled conditions. And so the intonation itself of the keyboard instruments is not something that the player gets involved with. On the other hand, the coupling of the resonator so that it couples properly with each bar to get a consistent resonant response, that can be altered by the player in some cases. Some instruments have individually tunable resonators, the better quality instruments, and so those have to be maintained and adjusted on a regular basis. And then with any sort of mechanical object, there are any number of things that need to be maintained, whether it's something breaks or whether it just has to be adjusted properly.
And you're not always going to have a repair person on hand, so
be able to do something. Particularly with percussion, more so than anything else. You just have to learn a fair amount about nuts and bolts and getting your hands greasy and all that sort of stuff in order to keep things working.
This is WYLL's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and my guests on today's show, William Mersch, who is chair of the percussion division at the University of Illinois, and Ricardo Flores, who is his colleague in that department, both of them leading concerts this weekend. William Mersch is leading the UI Percussion Ensemble with an incredible battery of percussion, as we heard earlier in the show, on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and Ricardo leading the UI Steel Band with also an incredible battery of percussion beyond just what the title of the concert might suggest, so more than just steel pans, Saturday evening at 7:30. William, you brought along what I assumed to be a symphonic piece because you handed me this disc of music by Alexander Cherepnin with the Singapore Symphony Orchestra, and yet you assure me that this is a percussion piece.
Yes, in fact, this program for the concert on Sunday afternoon is what we call, or I would call, an arc of history, beginning from the very origins of percussion ensemble as a musical genre in the 1920s, and then coming forward to the present day. So among the first pieces which featured percussion alone, the real first one that we really look at was Cherepnin Symphony No. 1 from 1927. The second movement, Vivace, was just for the percussion section, and it basically presents all of the thematic material, musical material from the first movement without any of the pitched instruments. And there is one little bit for the string instruments. They knock on the wooden body of their instruments.
So they are
at a certain point.
That's a different sort of found percussion.
Right. And so it's basically a legno, a wooden sound. In this recording, I believe it's represented by a woodblock. No, maybe not. Maybe it's actually the string instruments in this recording.
So what are the instruments being played?
Well, it's a, sort of a slightly full orchestral percussion section going from tam-tam, or gong, as most people know it, bass drum, snare drum, tenor drum, crash cymbal, suspended cymbal, tambourine, triangle, castanets. It's probably another one I'm missing.
So just about everything except the ones that actually have pitches.
There's no timpani and there's no pitched keyboard in this version. And then we're coupling this on the same concert. In the next year, 1928, Dmitri Shostakovich wrote an opera titled The Nose, which is a very bizarre, surrealistic kind of opera.
I've read that story. It's really weird.
And it's based on a story of Google. And it's basically where a fairly low-level Russian bureaucrat wakes up one morning without his nose and then proceeds to figure out what happened to his nose. And he encounters the nose, which has enlarged and become animated and is now dressed in a superior officer's uniform and the talk of the town and so on and so forth. And so the opera is all about, first of all, rediscovering the nose and then convincing the nose, who refuses, to rejoin his face and then eventually getting it back in his face. But at any rate, at one point in the first act, there's an entr'acte, which is also just for the percussion section. So
that'll be on the program
Sunday. So that's
well.
Also on the program.
But what we have right now is this second movement of Alexander Trepanin's first symphony, played here by the percussion section and I guess some of the strings, whacking on their instruments.
Just knocking.
Knocking
gently.
On them.
Yes. Not whacking. That's our job.
The Singapore Symphony, led by Lan Shui, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was the second movement of the first symphony by Russian composer Alexander Trepanin, played by the percussion section and some fiddle players knocking on the wood of their instruments with the from the Singapore Symphony Orchestra here, conducted by Lan Shui on WILL's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, host of the show, and with us on the program today, William Mersch, head of the University of Illinois' Percussion Division, and Ricardo Flores, his colleague in the department, both of them leading concerts this weekend by the UI Steel Band on Saturday and the Percussion Ensemble on Sunday afternoon, both of them at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And I hope that listeners are enjoying themselves as much as I am. It's turned out to be fun to talk about these things. And I had no idea that this was the first symphonic percussion movement, and we've talked about the Shostakovich, which we're not going to hear.
Right.
But now I want to go out and see the opera, The Nose, for those who haven't heard that description in the earlier part of the show.
Well, it's actually undergoing a popular revival. It's going to be at the Met this
really?
Coming season.
In the present season, or
I think it's next year.
Well, I'll have to check. Check that out.
It was revived the Bard Music Festival that I was involved with. Before I came to Illinois, did a production in fairly recent years, and then Boston Opera did a production that was quite well received, and that encouraged the Metropolitan Opera to undertake it.
Since we were talking about the different pitched instruments, the marimba, vibraphone, and so on, it's been kind of a discovery for me as a conductor to realize more than I ever did before I was doing that it not only matters what instrument you play, but also what you hit them with. So you can hit timpani or kettle drums with all kinds of different sticks and get very different sounds, and a well-prepared percussionist is going to bring a whole bag's worth of things to hit their instruments with.
Yes, there's a wide variety of what you might choose as an implement to strike one of the instruments, and at the same time, there's an even more significant yet subtle aspect of how you strike it. And so it goes back to physics that you mentioned before. But in percussion, the way that I present it to the students is that the height of the stroke is connected to the dynamic or the volume that you're going to play. The speed of the stroke is connected to the articulation that you are desirous of obtaining.
Longer, shorter, harder.
A faster stroke will give more distinct attack to the note. Well, this also starts to get into one of the secrets of percussion, which is that for every other instrument, when they talk about articulation, they're talking about the length of the notes and the space, if any, between the notes. For percussion, in the main, we can't control the length of the note. We have instruments that sustain in some cases. And we can control that sustain by dampening it, by actually touching it with our hand and stopping it from vibrating.
Like a cymbal or
a cymbal or a triangle or something like that. And we have other instruments that have damper pedals built into them, like chimes or vibraphone, much like a piano damper pedal where you let up the pedal and it touches the vibrating surface and that stops it. But apart from those few instruments where we can stop it vibrating with our hand, there's really nothing else that we can do in the way that we strike the instrument, which is going to affect the duration of the sustain. And so what we do in percussion, when we talk about somehow giving a different aspect, different quality to the articulation, is that we have we develop a wide variety of different types of attack. So that by changing the quality of the attack of the note, the first striking sound of the note, we give the illusion of somehow changing the duration of the note. And so we can have a legato attack or a staccato attack or a marcato attack or these various musical terms for different types of articulation. And all we're really doing is changing the initial quality of sound. And that's done by the speed of the attack, so that a slow attack and the slowest usable stroke is to just use the rate of gravity and to allow the mallet to fall at the speed of gravity to the instrument, and then you have to assist the recovery to get it off the instrument. That becomes our legato type of our softest, most gentle kind of a slow attack.
But that'll also be affected by the type of stick you're using. You can use
use hard, you can use soft, you can use a variety of different things. But one of the key elements of really being a skilled percussionist is to be able to take the same stick and produce a variety of colors and attack qualities with it.
So if you have one that has covered with yarn,
for instance,
is one way. It could be metal, it could be wood, it could be a softer, almost foam kind of thing.
Right. So you'll have any number of mallet constructions and choices which the composer may specify or which the individual performer may choose to use for a certain situation. And so, for instance, part of the identity of a really fine marimbist is not only what mallets they choose to use, but also how they voice, say, the four mallets that they're holding. In most cases, they're not going to be all four of exactly the same mallet. They're going to be selected in combination to allow different registers of the instrument to respond in different ways. But it also comes down to the fact that when you're playing music, you can't be changing your mallet for every single note that you play.
So you've got to change your technique.
So you also have to develop the technique to be able to get musical results without changing the stick.
So how many marimbas are we going to have on stage on Sunday afternoon's concert?
As a matter of fact, on Sunday afternoon, we're not going to have a single marimba
on
stage.
No kidding.
And in fact, this entire concert is primarily drum and found object oriented. The only pitched keyboard instrument on stage is going to be a xylophone for one particular number.
I'm shocked.
But I hope not appalled.
No, not appalled, just fascinated, because folks who were listening at the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned all kinds of instruments that were going to be on the program, and I assumed they were augmenting the marimbas and the vibraphones and so on, but they're it.
Well, what I'm trying to do here is to get a nice rotation going on, and I don't know if you may recall or not, but last spring we did a concert which was entirely marimba orchestra based.
And that's partly why I asked.
And
yeah,
we had
the numbers.
This huge array of marimbas and so on and so forth. And so that was our keyboard installment. So this time around, I decided I'd like to focus more on groove-oriented music and not so much keyboard, more drum and percussion-oriented stuff.
And so we've got a sample of that queued up next, I think.
Yes, we do.
Which is what?
In our arc of history that I mentioned before, this is a piece from 1930, a Cuban composer by the name of Amadeo Roldan. He wrote a set of six pieces called the Rítmica, numbers 1 through 6. Numbers 1 through 4 happen to be for woodwind, quintet, and piano. Numbers 5 and 6 are for percussion. And so these are really regarded as the first standalone percussion ensemble pieces. Everyone usually speaks about Edgar Varèse's Ionization, which is from 1931. As being the first Western percussion ensemble, but Roldan actually beat him by a little bit.
So who's playing on this recording?
This is a Mexican percussion ensemble entitled Tambuco, and the one that you're going to hear is Rítmica number 6.
And you're hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Well, that sounded like a lot of fun to play, as long as you know what you're doing, I guess. And the music was heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm going to let the chair of the University of Illinois' percussion division, William Mersch, tell you exactly what that was, because he's got the info in front of him and I don't.
Again, that was Amadeo Roldan's Rhythmica number six, my mistake, from 1930. And this is unusual in the sense that it's a Cuban composer, Spanish-trained Cuban composer, writing for the most part, Afro-Cuban, locally obtained percussion instruments, but using them in a slightly different manner. For example, in this piece, there are four different clave parts. Well, clave in Afro-Cuban usually means a pretty set two-measure pattern that keeps going all the way through the piece and doesn't change. In this case, each of the four clave players plays that pattern, but they're all displaced from each other rhythmically, which is a little unusual for that style of music. There's another instrument in here that you might recognize and say, what the heck is that? And that's a marimbula, which is sort of like a bass thumb piano. It's also a Caribbean instrument. It's a very large wooden box with metal tongues attached to it, which are plucked.
So kind of like an African mbira.
Kind of right.
Similar principle.
But just bigger.
You have a guest artist on Sunday's program.
We do. In amongst all of the percussion and only one keyboard percussion instrument, we actually have a flute. So Professor Jonathan Keeble, the flute professor from the university, is joining us for one piece by André Jolivet, a French composer, for flute and percussion quartet from 1965.
And a world premiere on the concert as well.
We do. I'm very dedicated to the idea of premiering new works. So we have a piece by a graduate composer, composition student at U of I named Stephen Lett. We're premiering a piece of his entitled Junta for percussion trio.
And sounds like a lot of variety on that show.
As I say, it ranges from the historical pieces beginning in the late 1920s through the 30s and 40s, when we have John Cage and Lou Harrison and their activities in developing percussion ensemble, up through the Jolivet in the 60s, and then we have a couple pieces from just in the last decade, including one piece, which is hot off the press.
Hot off the press, that's great. William Mersch, leading the U of I Percussion Ensemble, Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Krannert Center. And with us also Ricardo Flores, his colleague in the percussion division, leading the Steel Band Saturday night, along with their small student group, IPAN. I mean, they're all students, but they run themselves. That's at 7:30 at the Krannert Center. And I know you gentlemen need to go, so Ricardo, why don't you introduce this last piece? We're going to go out with some steel band music.
Well, actually, before I do that, I just wanted to mention that Saturday happens to be October 31st.
It does, in fact.
It is sort of a theme concert in that the students are going to be in costume, and anybody in the audience who wants to is encouraged to bring their costumes as well. I have no idea what I'm going to wear yet, but we'll figure it out by then. And we're actually going to throw in a couple of Halloween tunes.
So there'll be some spooky pieces in there?
A couple of spooky pieces.
I imagine you can make the steel band sound pretty spooky, drum.
In general, it's a spooky sounding group, but playing these pieces, I think you'll get the gist of it. But the next piece we're going to listen to is not really spooky. It's a beautiful sort of ballad called 2B, written by Barbara Higbee, arranged by Michael Bump.
Michael Bump. And that's not a joke.
No, that's his name.
And he's an alum of the percussion.
Is he? You know, he's been here, and he's been here since I've been around, I think. I remember this guy.
He was finishing up his DMA just when I started teaching here.
Which would have been right about the same time. Yeah, okay, well, good. I thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for
having
us.
You've been very gracious with your time, and I certainly learned a lot, and I hope our listeners did as well. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. is a tune called To Be by Barbara Higbee, arranged by Michael Bump and performed by the University of Illinois Steel Band, led by Ricardo Flores, which is giving its concert Saturday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center, and on Sunday afternoon, the UI Percussion Ensemble, led by William Mersch, at 3 o'clock also at the Krannert Center in Urbana. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Hope you enjoyed today's show. On Monday's program, we'll have trombonist Jim Pugh and trumpet player Walter Blanton, who is guest of the UI Jazz Division. They're going to be, along with a number of other faculty members at the UI Jazz Division, giving some performances and presentations starting Monday, and we'll have them on the show for a conversation and also some music, of course. That's Monday from 12 to 1. Coming up in about 5 minutes, we have a weather forecast. Actually, I'll probably give the weather forecast. No, I'll do it right about 1 o'clock. And then we'll have news headlines at 1:01. And Gillian Martin is back with more classical music starting at 1:06. Time for our calendar, and I'm glad we saved a fair amount of time because, of course, as usual on the weekend, there's a fair amount going on, including in Bloomington and Springfield this weekend, the Illinois Symphony gives its Halloween Pops concert. It's tonight at 8 o'clock in Bloomington at the Center for the Performing Arts, Saturday at 8 o'clock in Springfield at the Sangamon Auditorium at the U of I of Springfield. Neil Simon's Rumors is being given by Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater Friday and Saturday at 6:30 and Sunday at noon. On this campus of Illinois State University, it's the Koch Studio Concert at the Kemp Recital Hall of ISU in Normal. That's at 7 o'clock Friday night. At 7:30 Friday night, Street Beat, a program of percussion and much more at the Krannert Center tonight at 7:30. Arthur Miller's play, The Crucible, is being put on by the University of Illinois Department of Theater tonight and tomorrow at 7:30, and no Sunday matinee, I don't believe. That's at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Champaign Central High School presents Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. And, you know, I don't have all these performances on here somehow. 2:30 on Sunday. Not sure if there's a matinee tomorrow or not. And the Boneyard Jazz Quintet performing tonight at 5 during the happy hour at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. The Beats Go On, readings from the Beat Generation, accompanied by live jazz music at Charleston Alley Theater tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. And a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. That's in Charleston. And the Illinois Brass Quintet, hosted by yours truly, will be giving its annual Halloween Spooktacular tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Illinois State University's Jazz Ensemble presenting its Halloween concert tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on the ISU campus in the Center for the Performing Arts in Normal. Tap Dogs, a program featuring, as you might expect, tap dancers at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, the Illinois State University Symphony Orchestra and Choral Concert at the Center for the Performing Arts on ISU campus in Normal. That's Sunday afternoon at 3. And I think I've covered everything that I've got on my schedule. If you would like to let us know about your event, your performance event, or your ensemble or organization that we can cover on this show, by all means, tell me by writing to me at willcalendar@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L calendar@illinois.edu. Our program today is made possible with support from Parkland Art Gallery at Parkland College. The gallery's exhibitions and educational programs are offered free of charge to the public. Artist receptions, interviews with artists, and other special programs are offered to interpret the exhibits. I enjoyed so much the performances by the University of Illinois Latin Jazz Ensemble on yesterday's show that I thought we'd go out with another cut from their CD. This is a tune called I Remember Diz by Paquito de Rivera. Thank you. There's a flash flood watch or a plane flood watch in effect for the entire WYLL severe weather coverage area until 7 o'clock tonight, and an urban and small stream flood advisory in effect for Ford and Iroquois counties until 1:45 this afternoon, just another 45 minutes. This afternoon, cloudy and windy with rain, heavy at times, the high 67. Tonight, cloudy, breezy, and turning cooler with a few lingering showers possible in the evening, the low 42. Tomorrow, partly sunny, breezy, and cooler, the high 55. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high of 57. We're at 66 now. This is WYLL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. We're the listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.